Hello and welcome to the Citation Podcast. I'm Mick Feather and today we're exploring how care providers can not just survive, but truly future-proof their organisations. The care sector is facing a wave of change. We know workforce legislation is going to be front and centre with the upcoming Employment Rights Bill set to transform the landscape. From strengthening minimum wage protections and expanding pay gap reporting, through to tackling insecure contracts and boosting enforcement via the new Fair Work Agency, these shifts will have very real consequences for providers. Add to that evolving CQC priorities from workforce sustainability and safe staffing to environmental and governance agendas, and it's clear that providers need to be looking around the corner, not just reacting when change lands on their doorstep. To help us unpack this, I'm joined by two outstanding guests. First, we have Jill McAteer, Citation's Director of Employment Law, who'll bring a clear view on what the Employment Rights Bill really means in practice. And of course, Nadra Ahmed, Executive Chair of the National Care Association, who's been at the forefront of representing providers through decades of change. So let's start with the big picture. Nadra, from your viewpoint nationally, what do you see as the most significant compliance regulatory shifts on the horizon?
Well, I think anything to do with employment law will have enormous consequences as we go forward. And we can't underestimate some of the challenges, some of the risks. But of course, there will be benefits as well. And I think we need to take them all in some sort of order. This will happen alongside the fact that we still have over 120,000 vacancies in our sector, so we still need that workforce. We've got challenges around international recruitment, which the social care visa has been locked out now. So we're going to be fighting for a domestic workforce to ensure that we can continue to deliver safe care in our sector, and with the background that we need another 450,000 care workers in our sector by the 2030s. So if you look at that background, anything that comes in now legislatively, we've got to then start thinking about the challenges. And whilst there are some really good bits within that employment bill, we've got to be clear about the implementation and the cost elements of that, which, with the backdrop of the challenges of funding for social care, are going to be huge. I can see that from providers talking to us, they're really worried about this whole issue around sick pay from day one. That will bring in some challenges. The zero-hour contracts, again, people are a little bit concerned about that, because we must be clear that actually zero-hour contracts are sometimes by the choice of the person who's being employed, by the employee, because it fits in with their work patterns or their way of living. So I think if you look at it from that perspective, that will have its own challenges as we go forward. And the Fair Pay Agreement will be alongside the National Living Wage. We know that there's been some funding allocated for a year for the Fair Pay Agreement. But we also know that that is not sufficient to meet the deficit. So the funding crisis will no doubt follow on top of the legislative framework. But let's think about the positive on this, because if it supports our workforce and it enables us to recruit better, then actually that's going to have to be a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think the development of care staff has always been the challenge, isn't it? Trying to get people to get into care and also show that there's some kind of development in terms of what that is. So having a set amount of money is probably going to make it a little bit more encouraging. However, it's a bit of a challenge. So, Jill, from your perspective, what do you think are the parts of the bill that care providers should be paying closest attention to right now?
Well, I think planning is absolutely key. But here, providers have a huge obstacle in that normally when a piece of legislation is passed, it's very clear what is going, how the impact is going to have on your business and how you can actually start to think about implementing that. And we just don't have that clarity with the Employment Rights Bill. It covers 30 really fundamental changes to employment law. And there's very few of those that we actually have got real clarity on what the final changes will look like. Most of it is going to be overseen by a series of consultations followed by regulations. So all we really know is change is coming, but we don't know what that change is going to look like. For example, the changes to 0 hours. There's complete mystery about what that actually is going to look like in practice. Having said that, there are some things that providers can start to look at now. For example, with regard to SSP, it's not just a question of thinking, right, in April, we're going to have to pay SSP from day one. It's actually using this opportunity now to look at how absence is managed within your business. Being aware of the rates of absence, because sometimes actually people aren't even aware of that and how policies can be reviewed and what changes you can make in practice. Because I think what a lot of employers are worried about is that these changes might put a strain on increasing short-term sickness absence.
And I think it is really important. You know, you've just kind of gone through some of this. The important thing for providers, if you belong to an association, you've got a bit of a head start in that there will be information coming out to you. But even if you haven't, make sure that you read up on what the implications are for your business. I think that's, you know, being forewarned almost, even though there might not be certainty around it, you just be certain that this is coming in and it will have an impact.
So this is going to be a joint one for both of you, really. So I'm just taking it a step further, really, in terms of what these changes actually mean on a day-to-day basis. So, for example, because it's obviously very complicated, are we talking about major adjustments to things like contracts and new policies? Or are we really talking about shifts in really how providers actually recruit and retain staff? Is there a way, Jill, that you can break that down in terms of how you think the impact might be in terms of changes to recruitment and retention, knowing what changes are kind of potentially on the horizon?
Well, yes, because these changes are absolutely huge. I mean, when you talk about the 0 hours changes, the whole workforce management piece, that's really fundamental to providers. And then when you look at day one rights to claim unfair dismissal, again, it goes to the very heart of your recruitment, how you induct employees, how you manage them during their probation processes. So it's, yes, it will mean changing contracts and reviewing policies, but I think it's really even more fundamental to that. Some of the basic HR processes and the way people have approached things for many years will have to be rethought.
And now, in terms of providers actually absorbing these changes, how do you think they're taking it in terms of their ability and capacity to be able to deal with it all?
I think there's a mixture, actually. There are some providers who are actually taking it on board and actually moving forward. But a lot of, especially the SME sector, in many ways, they're kind of thinking it'll happen, but it'll happen in a long time. But this is an opportunity to actually go through your HR. Mm. It's actually to go through every single member of staff, go through the contracts that people have, use this time that you've got, knowing that the changes are going to come in, knowing that something will change. Just make sure that you're absolutely accurate in what your expectation is of the employee and what the employee understands what your expectation is. But on top of that is that piece about the recruitment, which I think is really important. It's such a key part for us at the moment because recruitment, especially domestic recruitment, has been such a challenge. But with some of this coming through, make sure that you know what it is that you need to recruit to, who do you want to recruit into those posts, and go through them. If you've got people like Citation on your side, then actually move forward and get the advice that you can. If you work with lawyers, get the advice that you can. Work with people and absorb it, because then when it comes, it's kind of second nature. It will be fine. But if you have to do it on day one,
yeah,
it's going to feel like a much longer trek.
Yes, I think you're right there. So, regulation doesn't sit in isolation. So this is another joint question for both of you. I'm going to pitch it like that. So CQC's well-led and safe key questions are bound to reflect how providers respond to all of these employment and compliance pressures. So both of you, if you can think about what advice would you give providers about making sure that they're inspection ready while managing all of this? Where should we start? Jill, do you want to start?
Yes, I think, again, it is about, of course, this is all about leadership culture and making people feel supported. And I think that really starts with the knowing what's ahead and planning for it and making sure that those changes are communicated and in many respects, there's training given to help people navigate that. That for me is going to be absolutely critical. So the treating this as any other strategic change in your business and planning for it and not thinking that it's just going to be something that you do a couple of weeks beforehand. We need to start thinking about the potential impact now.
I think the other thing that's really important is making sure that you open doors now to better communication with your workforce, because they will also be hearing some of this. And if you can actually manage to include them in the comms that's going to be coming out. So, for example, a lot of providers have been talking about the right for unions to be going into care settings, being invited in. You know, some people are telling me they've already done that. They've always got it. Others are saying, well, this is not going to be a great thing, is it? But don't close your eyes to it, because it will be there. So talking to your staff, making them realise what might be coming down or what might not be coming down, gauging their views, getting their thoughts, getting their ideas about it, I think that will help you navigate some of the work that might need to go into it. This is not only about pay. I think that's the important thing to remember. Although it's called fair pay, it's not only about pay. It's about lots and lots of other things, terms and conditions. Pay will hit the headlines. But actually, if it's not funded by government to make sure that local authorities are paid that and that they are able to fund and buy care at that price, this is going to be a route to disaster. So there is a warning shot across to government as well, really, that if you're going to raise these expectations and you're going to raise this view that this has to be funded at that level as well, because otherwise it's just going to create more tension within the sector. And the only people that will suffer is the people that we support if services start to become unviable.
Thank you. So what I'm going to, this is going to be kind of like a bit of a one word, one sentence kind of response really to this one, because I'm going to change this one around a little bit. So out of all of the things that are happening, and obviously there are quite a few, if you had to prioritize things that potentially providers could do right now to actually reduce the compliance burden while still actually providing safe, good quality care, and in terms of preparation for these changes, what would be the thing that you would suggest? And from Nadra, from your point of view, obviously for Jill, it's about, you know, balancing the legal part and the workforce protections. But from your point of view, about the association's perspective, you know, what would be on your wish list for kind of, you know, basically care providers to actually kind of concentrate on? So what would be your things that you would say, yes, these are things that you need to be putting in place right now?
It's the workforce. It's got to be the workforce. No workforce, no care. That's got to be what we've got to think about. And that's why it's so important to have a confident and a competent workforce in place that we can reward properly. And that's the key to us delivering good care.
Yeah.
I completely agree. I think looking at how you recruit your workforce and how you induct them. I think what you said earlier, Nadra, was about the expectations. That's really central to this. The government have said that really that will be one of the things which is most closely scrutinised. To what extent have you made expectations known right at the very beginning? But also I would say as well is looking at the makeup of your workforce and the extent to which you use zero-hours contracts. I think over recent years, there has been this idea that there's lower risk with zero-hours contracts. And even if it's not particularly necessary for some roles, that that's the default in some respects. And to actually review that and think, actually, is this the best format going forward? And of course, how you manage the workforce in terms of notifying of shifts and things like that. So starting to think about that. But just a note of caution there as well. I mean, it would not be the case that you would suddenly think, right, I think there's lots of risk with this in future, so I'm going to get rid of zero-hours contracts. Any change brings risk with it. And so therefore, it needs to be done in consultation with your employees.
Thank you very much. So finally, and I always talk about this because I know that people who are involved in care and care providers are not necessarily experts on health and safety or HR or employment law. And we do hear quite a lot that providers, you know, struggle to do some of those things on their own. So what role do you think compliance partners like Citation should play in helping services actually prepare not just for today, but for long-term things that we've been discussing?
If you want to take the headache out of trying to interpret it, it's worth having a partner like Citation to try and take you through it. Because then you can always come back with questions. And actually, you can use that as the starting point for any changes to your contracts or anything. And you were talking about zero-hour contracts. And, you know, I do worry about the zero-hour contracts piece because we actually have staff who come and say they are only going to work so many hours. So what's going to happen to them? And what, you know, how are we going to respond to that? So I think senior managers will be wanting to know that. The leadership models lead us to have experts as a safety net behind us. And I think that's where partnerships are key.
Yes, I mean, the Employment Rights Bill is an incredibly complex piece of legislation. I mean, when it was first published, it was 158 pages long, and we were all a little bit, oh, and this is a bit more ambitious than we thought it was going to be. And it's now 330 pages long. And as I said, that's just the start of it. So I think where we come in is trying to make the complex straightforward and to really translate it into what is changing, how is this going to impact your business, and what do you need to do now to plan? And that's a conversation we're already having with our clients.
Future-proofing the care sector isn't about predicting the unpredictable. It's about building resilience so that when change comes, providers are ready. From today's discussion, it's clear that understanding workforce legislation, anticipating regulator focus, and leaning on the right support are all part of the toolkit for success. A huge thank you to my guests, Jill McAteer, for her expert take on employment law, and Nadra Ahmed for bringing the national voice of care providers to the table. And to our listeners, at Citation, our mission is to stand alongside you as a partner, helping you cut through the noise of compliance and focus on delivering outstanding care. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.